The NBA playoffs continue, and the Eastern Conference is going to be tipping off. And on the Western side of things, what a finish last night!
Yeah,
where DeAndre Ayton coming out of an inbound alley oop with 0.9 on the clock, he looked a little bit confused, like he wasn't sure if it was going to count. An inbound alley oop, you can get that down at 0.9. Like, mm-hmm. that was over, and what a spectacular finish. And now they head to L.A. for Game 3, and it sounds like Chris Paul is planning on returning for Game 3.
I love it.
Here is Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider and senior writer. Watching that live, Brian, did you just assume it was good, or were you waiting to see how the rest were going to react to that play last night?
I was stunned. I just couldn't believe how it went. I want to say that it looked easy, but of course it wasn't easy. I mean, I would give Jay Crowder and DeAndre Ayton 10 tries in an empty gym, just the two of them, to hit the timing like that. Because he wasn't just standing there under the basket waiting for the ball to be thrown. He was on the move, running a curl, and spinning around and going up there. The ball arrived the same time that his hand did. And not only that, but, you know, this is one thing I don't think can be underestimated. Crowder was in the corner. Very unusual that you would inbound a ball from there. Most of the time you're inbounding the ball from, you know, under the basket out of bounds or the sideline out of bounds, halfway up the sideline. You don't practice throwing the ball from over there. You may play a whole season and have the ball out of bounds there three or four times for a whole team. It's a very awkward situation. So for them to execute that, I just don't believe they practiced it from that spot. And if they have, I'll be glad to be corrected. But it was almost like a soccer play, like a corner kick. That's what was so amazing to me, is that the pass, the timing was like they'd been doing it for years together. So it was just a stunning play all around. And a lot goes into a game like that to win or lose. But, my God, what an incredible finish.
What's this experience been like for you, Brian, not being asked what's LeBron going to bring tonight? How big is LeBron going to be? LeBron this, I mean, this is his time of year. Golden State, it's like it's a whole new experience, a lot of fresh faces. What are your thoughts on all of it, big picture?
Yeah, I mean, look, LeBron's been in the finals 10 times. I mean, that's a central part of our lives, you know. And so, but to me, you know, I mean, you're asking a fair question, but it's all a job to me. I cover what's there for me to cover. I actually think it's a good thing to have some new blood. I wish LeBron wouldn't have been eliminated because his team was injured. I wish they'd been eliminated a little bit differently. But, you know, this is one of the things I see people saying, that there's an asterisk to this because there's so many guys injured. And I'm like,
come
no.
On.
The reason it's so hard to win is because guys get injured. If anything, this title is more valuable because so many guys couldn't make the gauntlet. So, I think the teams that have left standing, it's a credit to them that they're still standing.
With Brian Windhorst from ESPN, NBA insider and senior writer. So it was somewhat of a triumphant night for people up here in Toronto last night, when the card flipped at 7 and it wasn't their logo and they move up to 4. You know, you get greedy when, you know, ESPN hits a break and you're like, all right, let's go here. Like, let's see if they can come up first. And it was somewhat anticlimactic, or it ended quickly. But moving from 7 to 4 is huge value. And, you know, they've got some heavy lifting to do anyway this offseason. But when you consider how big of a disaster their year was for a multitude of reasons, you know, they're in Tampa, COVID, everything went against them for the most part, but they did tank down the stretch. Is it worth it? I mean, how do you look back on the Raptors season now, considering what we learned last night?
Huge event for the Raptors. Huge. I mean, there are years when the difference between 4 and 7 isn't that much. And there are years when the difference between 2 and 4 is massive. This doesn't appear to be one of those years. Now, having said that, we just had one of the best rookies drafted 12th, so nobody has the market cornered on the draft. That's the nature of the beast. But to move up into the top 4 in this draft is a huge score for the Raptors. It absolutely opens them to getting potentially a future franchise player. And the interesting thing will be, you know, there are scenarios there where Jalen Suggs, who I am not a draft expert, guys. I cannot you know, give you chapter and verse on all of these top prospects like some of my coworkers can who've been tracking these guys since they were 12. I'm not one of those guys. But I love Jalen Suggs from Minneapolis out of Gonzaga. I think he's a dynamic point guard. And if Jalen Suggs is sitting there at 4 and you draft him, it totally informs the way you may go forward. Like, you know, Kyle Lowry may be, you know, gone no matter what, but it totally informs the way you make your decisions if you can get a guy like that. And you know, you look at a team like Oklahoma City, who was going into the night with the possibility of getting picks 1 and 5, and not pie in the sky, like 0.5%. Like, they had real percentage chances of getting 1 and 5, and they walk away with 6. They are on the outside looking in. The Raptors are on the inside looking out, and they have a whole bunch of options they can go to. They could also trade the pick. You know, I mean, you know, there's, you know, what if you call Philadelphia and ask about Ben Simmons? I mean, there's a lot of options that just opened up for the Raptors.
You just mentioned Kyle Lowry. Have you been kind of sniffing around on that? What are you hearing on him? Like, the likelihood of him returning to Toronto? We had their GM on earlier, and he mentioned the importance of Lowry to the organization. How do you see it playing out, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, Kyle is Mr. Raptor, right? I mean, his number will be retired. He helped bring the championship. You know, there's nothing needs to be said about him. The thing about it is, when they elected not to trade him, they lost their control of the situation. So if he wants to walk to a place like Miami, which I could understand that he might want to go there, he's got a close relationship with Jimmy Butler. They're going to potentially have plenty of salary cap space. My speculation is that he may have to wait a few minutes while other things play out. He may be a guy who has to let the market, you know, go for a day or two, and I don't even necessarily mean the opening of free agency, because free agency all gets done before free agency these days. But he may have to wait to let things develop. But you know, the Raptors could sign and trade him, certainly, but I wouldn't necessarily count on that.
Yeah, I think their offseason could go so many different ways, you know, and in many ways it has to begin with the architect of it all, and Masai. And you've been on this show countless times, and we've talked about Masai and his scenario, and I suppose nothing has changed today as opposed to where it was a month or two ago. But if the dominoes fall, I can picture a scenario where they are back in a very positive situation next season, and especially when you consider what happened last night. But do you see a fork in the road? Like, is there a potential road or a potential door that could lead to multiple seasons here of kind of dark clouds hanging over this team? Or do you think it's one and done for them going through what they just went through?
Well, I really like their talent. I just, you know, they were dealt a very difficult hand this year, and they didn't play their best, and there was probably a number of reasons for that. So, do I think they're going to be a championship contender next season? Not, I can't say that right now, but they could definitely be a high-level playoff team. And, you know, getting this pick, you know, can, you know, you're not doing a rebuild, you're doing just a pause. And, you know, you could have done a 3-year rebuild where you tanked all year long and not gotten the 4th pick in a draft like this. This accelerates everything for them.
Yeah, it really does. And I wonder what the view is throughout the league about tanking. That, I mean, tanking is a part of sports, and it might be more prevalent in the NBA than anywhere else. But you look at what's happened in Philly now. Like, they were the definition of tanking in the process and all that, and it has not got them to where they want to. Although on the flip side, I guess Phoenix was pretty bad for a while. I don't know if it was tanking necessarily, but you look at where they are. But look at what Oklahoma City's going through and what you just detailed a few moments ago, Brian. Like, they're putting as many tickets into the lottery, and it didn't come up for them, so now they kick it down the curb that much more, down the street that much more, and hope it works for them in the future. Is, where does tanking, you know, what is the definition of it in the NBA, and how do people around the league feel about it today compared to maybe where it was a couple of years ago?
All right, let's just be 1,000,000,000% honest, right? The NBA is about whether you've got the 2 or 3 star players. Everything else is just window dressing. You can develop guys. You can develop your backup point guard. You can get your role-playing center. You can have your shooting guard. You can have your defensive specialist. All that stuff, it doesn't not matter. But if you don't have those two or three players, we're all just messing around and filling the void of our lives. Okay.
Yeah.
So your quest. If you're a general manager, an owner of a team, is got to get the stars, got to get the stars, got to get the stars. It's almost like tattooed on your forehead. Got to get the stars, got to get the stars. That's what it's all about. Anything else is, whatever. So there's only a couple of ways you can get stars. You can sign them, you can trade for them, or you can draft them. Well, I don't think Toronto is going to be signing too many guys in free agency. I do think some point they could get a star in free agency under the right circumstances, but they can't bank on that. They traded, that's how they got their title. They traded for one, so of course you look for that. But your best route is to draft one. And that is why these teams sacrifice everything at times to try to go get that to happen in the draft. And because of the stakes and because of the way it's set up and because there's so few of them and the impact that they have, you don't have to be like a PhD from Harvard to analyze the situation and see what you have to do. And that's all that Sam Hinkie said. It really wasn't that revolutionary. It was actually pretty elementary. He was just willing to go to the nth degree to do it. And so that's what this is about. The Raptors didn't have a chance to win a championship until they had one or two or three best players in the NBA. So that's what all of their decisions have to revolve around.
Well, let's see what happens come the end of July and throughout the offseason. Always great to catch up with you. Thank you for doing this, Brian.
Take care, guys.
There's Brian Windhorst of ESPN.
I like Brian Windhorst.
I do, too.
Yeah, he's to the point, man.
Yeah.
He doesn't sugarcoat anything.
That's it. I like it. I like what he brings to the table.
He's right. I mean, a lot of times you overthink it, or you try to get a read on some sort of philosophy change, and ultimately it does come down to who's got the best players.
That's it. Get to the nuts and bolts. Who's got the top three that can get the job done?
Yep. And the reason Brooklyn is not playing tonight, it's because two of their top three didn't play or couldn't
play. And I'll tell you what, you get that Chris Paul back, watch out, because that's dangerous out there.
And Devin Booker took him a while, but he's here now. He's arrived, and he's a star. DeAndre Ayton, they took first overall in 18, I believe it was. Took him a few years, but he's a star. And Chris Paul's a star. Like, there's your three. And then you fill
Chris
it out,
Paul's,
and you're loaded.
And Chris Paul's kryptonite around is not around right now. Like, Steph Curry ain't coming up the gut here to just crush him.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you never know. They can pull it off.
Well, and until we hear otherwise, Kawhi's not lurking in the background either. You know, like, I don't think he's going to play. So,
which sucks. I mean, for him, you know,
it does.
And them.
And for the Clippers, because of what we just said, they can't win without Kawhi.
Right?
Like, they have to have him, more than likely. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, shout out to Brian Windhorst. Thank you for joining us, as always.